Piece of stinking filth.
Say it again, Shal. This is AJ of the InfoWars. Listen to the Shaliak. This is Alex Jones of InfoWars. Listen to Shaliak on the Cold Reality News and Report.
This is the coolest thing I have ever seen.
Well, hello there!
All right, welcome to the program today. Cold Reality Radio here on the UCY.TV Broadcasting Network. My guest again today, and for that matter, co-host, Clint Richardson from the Corporation Nation, and we're going to talk about the Bible and things that that Clint has learned from, through his process, and we're going to talk about private citizens again. Only the private are elected. And so, Clint, do I have you there? Do you have me? You called me in?
Yeah.
Okay. Did you hear the audio when you connected or no?
I did.
Okay, good. For some reason I didn't, but I guess that's probably just because I'm, you know, on this end. Anyway, welcome. Welcome, sir.
Well, thank you very much. Good to be here again.
Good to have you. Okay. So it is Sunday, March 6th. We're already into the third month of this year, and there are so many things that are happening out there. The fiction that I kind of always knew was there, but until I started to communicate and hear about Clint's Corporation Nation program, I didn't really truly understand it, and I'm still moving through that process. But at the same time, knowing and feeling for like the longest time, like this isn't real. These things that I am seeing are not, this is not the way the world works. And I don't know why I was in that position. Maybe I'm supposed to, you know, I don't think there's any coincidences. I think that where we are right now at this point in time is where we're supposed to be. I think that we all have some kind of, we all have a certain kind of mission here to either realize or maybe not realize. I don't know, you know, and this is where your information and your program opened up my mind to so many different things. the door was already unlocked, but the Corporation Nation just kind of pushed it open even further for me. And to understand more about this artificial reality. This is not the way it was supposed to be. Money was not, everything did not and should not have a price. But we were warned. We were warned at some point in this book, in this document, in these ancient scriptures, that these things would take place. And that we should heed the warning. Is that a pretty good, you know, novice breakdown?
Well, it's the nature of the Bible is timeless. It's not a historical document, first of all. So when you treat it as a historical document, when you consider, I was listening just to the last, you know, 5 minutes or 2 minutes there of that last program. And she was talking about timeless, you know, going back and forth. If you consider God, quote unquote, the word in its highest form, which is Jehovah, if you think of it as anything but a timeless concept, something that will be in existence or it is existence in itself, Jehovah is actually a verb. And this was probably the greatest spiritually kind of awakening I had, was to say, okay, it's a verb. It's not a noun. In other words, the word noun means name. So, you know, everything has a name. But a name doesn't mean anything. It's empty. We named everything in nature, everything that you would call God's creation, if you will. Everything that is real, we put a name on it. We made it into a fiction. And the only thing that's controlled by law are the names, the nouns. So Clint Richardson is a fictional entity. I call it id entity. that causes my ego to enact and justify my id, basically. So I've got this sort of false sense of myself. And what's really interesting is that the word self is the fourth term in the Bible. The word self is used a lot because the concept of God is actually what's the best description of God is self-existence or self-evidence. So when the Bible, you said something really interesting. You said, you know, this isn't the way the world is supposed to work. Well, actually, when the Bible uses the word world, it's talking about all of the fiction and all of the magistrates and all of the gods, the false gods that that rule the nations. One of the things it says is, and the way I start my book is actually with the verse that says, all of the gods of the nations are idols. And if you take that to heart, and you understand what that means in the context of the maxims of law, the spirit of the law, it goes back to the maxim that the Creator controls. Okay, that maxim is to me the most important maxim of law that is respected throughout the whole entire quote unquote world. Because if I'm the creator of something, well, then I'm the controller of it. I'm the one that says, okay, you may use this, you may not. I patent it. I do whatever. Our names are letters patent. So if you consider that, and this is really what got me, man, is the notion that no matter what I do, I'm going to have a God. Whether that God is my choosing or not, that's up to me. How I act and how I present myself, how I speak to others, how I treat everyone else, that is going to be representative of who my God is. Now, if my God is the state, so be it. If I'm not compos mentis, if I'm not right mind, I'm not of right mind that I don't need a government. In other words, you know, government just means mind control, government, gubernator. If I am spiritually aware and awake and I understand what the Bible says, as you say, it gives you the choice. Law gives you the choice. Everything about the law gives you the choice. And so the great thing about the scriptures, and I call them scriptures because all that means is ancient knowledge. It's a source of knowledge that is passed on way before the Bible ever existed. And the really cool thing that I've discovered, people are not happy about the truth when you start speaking it about the Bible. I say it's not a historical document. When it says, this is what's going to happen, when it says God's going to judge you, you're going to suffer from the wrath of God because you don't fear God, all that means is that you're not respecting the natural law. So, I mean, if we are all bound up by disease, if we're all getting cancer, and we're all doing all these things, then obviously that is quote-unquote God's judgment. It's not something that some anthropomorphized figure in the sky is doing. No, we're doing it to ourselves. So we always have to take this personal responsibility for anything that happens to us, and that's because we're not following the natural path or the natural law of Christ. We're following the artificial path of all these different sort of false, or if you will, antichrist. And the Bible says, hey man, there's going to be, if you read, it says there's going to be a lot of antichrist. Everybody's going to be an antichrist. All the preachers, all the priests, these lawyers, they're all going to be the antichrists, plural, because they're part of a system that is. You know, if I were to put a word on what antichrist means, I would call it the law. I would call it the man's law. Period. Story. So it's really difficult to get to the point, but that you can accept the Bible for what it actually is. When we're talking about Jesus, the word Jesus, and I'll just use that vulgar, you know, English translation, it simply means, and this is so brilliant, it simply means Jehovah is salvation. That's all it means. It doesn't mean anything else. When Christ speaks in the Bible, when his personified character speaks in the Bible, he speaks in a way that says, hey, don't listen to me, don't worship me, you fools. Worship everything I say is of Jehovah, of God. Okay, everything I say is of the reality, God, reality, nature, you know, creation. These are all the same basic concepts. And so there was no, Jesus wasn't out there going, hey, become a Christian and follow me. He was saying, no, follow me so that you don't suffer from God's judgment. I'm not here to judge you. I'm here to save you. You know, that's one of those words that people don't like. And so you've got this notion that here's the one frickin' superhero that man is actually supposed to embrace and emulate. Right? We all worship Superman, Batman. We all want these superpowers. Here's the one superhero that was actually created in history that every man can actually become and manifest. And yet, no, you know, we're all stuck in Marvel. We're all stuck in things that we can never attain without completely destroying our nature, that is. And so I find it ironic, I find it fascinating that no one has actually embraced this and actually done the research to find out what the Bible actually says, and that it warns you, hey, if you, you know, we talked about vaccines, if you had animal DNA or human DNA into your own, start mixing and corrupting your blood, you're going to suffer. That's all it says. You're going to suffer God's wrath because you're not in harmony with the design. You're not in harmony with nature. It's so simple. And that's all it is, man. All Christianity really is nature worship. That's what really shocked me. When I understood that God, as a verb, is just describing that which is in being, in existence, in supremacy. It's going to be there whether we believe it or not. It's going to be there whether man kills himself or not. Man, I suddenly understood. And so it boils down to this. Jesus means Jehovah is salvation. So nature, in other words, creation, is salvation. Jesus is the Son of God. We take that and we say, oh, well, gee, let's go to the vulgar side, to the the dog Latin, and let's, oh, well, there must be sex involved. Well, let's debate. No. That's not what the word son actually means, nor does daughter mean daughter as we are accustomed to. It means the people of a city. Right? So the word son in the Bible, when Jesus is referred to as the capitalized word son, and I can't remember what that translates to in the Greek or Latin. But it actually means word. So if Jesus means Jehovah is salvation, and he's the Son of God, which means he's the Word of God, so this is very similar to Plato or any of the other authors out there who personified a concept into a character so that he could write about the character. For instance, the slaves in the cave. Nobody questions that the slaves in the cave from Plato were real people, nor does anybody say that the people in the five regimes were the democratic man and the aristocratic man. No one sits there, or Robin Hood, or King Arthur. No one actually sits there and argues and debates whether or not this character was a real character or a false character, a personification. But for some reason, that's what we do with the Bible. But if it's timeless, God is timeless, then obviously Christ must be a timeless concept. And so if you think about what that means, if Christ is the personification of the Word of God, and the Word of God is the law of God, right, the natural law, well, then all Christ is the example of how to walk in nature without being affected by evil. What's your sin? What is evil? What is sin? Anything artificial. Anything that is a lie, like a government or a church, anything that is false, that is not a creation of God, any persons, any flattering titles, your doctors, your lawyers, all your surnames, all your numbers, all your marks, and everything. And I'll tell you what, man, we have this concept that goes around the truth movement, right? And by the way, the word faith means truth. So whatever your faith is, that's your truth. And that's why truth is such a dangerous word, because it very seldom has to do with reality. One of the things, one of the guys I interviewed on one of my shows was a gentleman from, he was from England. We're talking about geocentrism. He had some fascinating stuff on that. And then we switched over to one of his other books, which was about having a breakdown. And that the whole system of drugs and everything else is designed to make you and me and everybody out there working like a slave to never have a breakdown. Oh, are you feeling depressed? Because you see that everything's totally, you know, screwed up. Everything is false. Everything is a lie that is confirmed and ratified and lived by everybody out there. We're all going to work for someone else. Not we're taking home money, which is debt, as our payment. So we get no consideration for our labor. We have no property. We have nothing. Everything's been taken from us, basically, through word, magic, and trickery. And I after I finished my show, I sort of relaxed a little bit, thought, had time to think a little deeper. I had a breakdown, man. I had a freaking mental breakdown, and I welcomed it. Because what I had come to the top of was this big heaping pile of shit. This big heaping pile of crap that we call facts and truths and all these different things. And, oh, look, I'm woke. I'm awake because I know about 9/11. Oh, I'm even more awake. And there's different levels of being awake. Now, nobody's awake. The only time that you become awake is when you have a breakdown, a mental breakdown, because all the shit they've foisted upon us, all the drugs and everything, everything has to collapse. The lie has to collapse in your mind. You have to actually stop respecting everybody's titles, the politicians, the judges. You have to actually realize that everything that you have ever believed is a lie before you can truly say that you're spiritually in any way, shape, or form awake. That's all that matters. Forget it. What are the kind of awake what you want, but a spiritual awakening? And that's the point.
Right.
That's the point where I'm at after going through the Bible and law and the Matrix and breaking it all down, reading the books that back the Matrix, which are Simulation and Simulacrum, and Out of Control, which is about systems, like a beehive is a system. All the actual plagiarized books behind the Matrix movies, and I put all that information together, all of a sudden I can see everything for what it is, which is actually just one big, honking, stinking lie that we all agree to live by. And that's it. And the whole system, if you haven't noticed, is designed to stop you from ever waking up to that fact.
Right. On the other side, I've been checking some of the audio levels, and we spoke before the show. They're saying that your voice sounds fine, but I'm hearing a lot of like distortion. I heard what you said, but do I still have you? I mean, or do you still have me?
We're all good.
Okay. Your voice just sounds maybe. Anyway, we'll just go with it as long as that they're getting it good there, and I'm hearing you. There just seems to be just a little bit of distortion, but all right. So, but people go along with this fiction because it's the only thing that they've ever known, and giving this up, you know, would be, you know, in their minds would be like there would be nothing, but that nothing would be, and I think you mentioned this on your program a number of times, you don't want to be something. You want to be no thing.
Right. That's what the Bible tells you.
You don't want to have a label. You don't want to. We shouldn't want to, and if we knew, we wouldn't allow people to say, oh, you're a doctor. No, I'm a healer. I heal people. You're a lawyer. You're a counselor. No, I just talk to people and, you know, maybe I've got a better understanding of something. But then again, all legal is fraud. So what is counseling? Just, you know, maybe going to a, you know, people go to a psychiatrist or a psychologist to talk about their problems. this is yet another artificial creation, much like the American Medical Association or the American Dental Association that said, hey, let's just put mercury in people's teeth. That's kind of cool. And so this fiction, everything is a fiction. Everything is it has been labeled and named, and because we don't know any better, most don't know any better, they just continue with the fiction because it's what was created for them. And then a number of times when you were in your podcast speaking with Daniel, he would talk about people that say that they're Catholics or they say that they're this when they don't really read the Bible, or if they do, they don't understand it. And I think, and this is where the word the understanding of these scriptures is, and because it's written in a specific language in a specific way, the artifice and the artificial creators get in there and say, well, we can twist this, we can twist that, and then we can take over this and control.
Well, it's very important to know. And like I said, I mean, this thing I've been writing, it's going to be offensive. Some part about it is going to be offensive to everybody because it's simply stating the truth. Whether it's the truth about the law and how the law operates, even though it's a fiction, you want to know how it actually works and why we're stuck in it. Whether it's about the Bible, whether it's about the movies, whatever the subject is, it's just the all out, balls out truth. It's not my opinion. It's not some. It's the reality of things, and the reality of things in every chapter of the Bible, you have a similar statement like this. My brethren, James 2:1, my brethren, have not the faith of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Lord of glory, with respect to persons. Now, most people would read that and not consider what's actually being said there. There's another one in Peter 1:17. It says, and if ye call on the Father, on God, who without respect of persons judges according to every man's work, past the time of your sojourning here in fear. Fear is not a bad word, it turns out. Fear is actually what you do when you're on a cliff and you look down and you say, well, holy crap, I better watch it or I'll fall off the cliff. Well, it's the same thing. Fear God's word, God's law, or you're going to fall off the damn cliff, right? Fear is not a bad word. But the church, the person, the artificial person, the corporation of every incorporated church, whether it's Methodist or Catholic or whatever it is, these are all persons, you see. And there's a fascinating sort of thread throughout the whole Bible. In every chapter it says, do not respect persons, have no faith, put no power or authority in persons or flattering titles. Over and over and over and over. And I think that's the most important lesson we need to learn, because we're all acting in person. I'm acting as Clint Richardson. I'm an employee of this corporation. I go to this corporation that calls itself by name a religion, but really it's just a corporation. Well, a person is a corporation. Okay, a name, a surname attached to your Christian name is a corporation. Everything's a corporation. Everything's a person, a persona. A person is a status. Now, we said, what was it you said earlier? Don't be something, be no thing.
Yeah, I remember you, I don't know what podcast number it was, but I think you were probably talking to Daniel, and you said, you don't want to be something. You want to be. It's better to be no thing than something, because if you're something, then someone labeled you or categorized you, and now if you go along with that, you're participating in the fiction.
And you don't own the label. You don't own the title. You don't own the name. Therefore, you don't own anything that's registered in that name or title, which is all the homes and the cars and all the property you buy. And this is the thing, you know. So you have to realize that your person is the property of someone else. And as long as you're acting in the person of someone else, well, then you follow their law, not the law of God. And their law says, hey, here's a license to break with God's law. Here, you're a soldier now. There's your flattering title. And soldiers have license to murder, to kill and rape and do all kinds of horrible things. But don't worry, you're doing that as a soldier. This is the point. Do not respect the person of another. Do not respect persons. If you kill somebody, you cannot go, I mean, you have to sort of imagine this, you know. This is the personification. This is how you tell a story, a fable, a parable. If I'm standing in front of God, which, of course, has no form that is man-like, but if I were to be standing in front of God, and I, you know, he says, I see you killed 130 people. And I say, well, no, I was a soldier, and I killed 130 gooks, or Germans, or Jews, or the what. Can you imagine the no, you know, but you say you're a Christian. Have you never read my word? You know, I'm going to, here's, oh, let me tell you again. Without respect of persons, God judges according to every man's work. What does that mean? He's looking, you can't hide your soul. You can't hide the stains, the blots, the blemishes on your soul. Those are with you. I don't care what title, what license, what piece of paper you have. This is the underlying theme of almost the entire aspect of the Bible. And nobody can deny out there that these are absolutely 100% self-evident laws, self-evident truths. And that's the beauty. As I figured out the Bible, I realized that it's all about self-evident truth. Not the kind of truth we talk about with 9/11 and that there's bombs and no planes and all kinds of truths. No, this is truth in the notion of reality. What is real and what is art? The art is the
in its purest form. In its purest form. Truth in its purest form.
And that's what this is telling you. It's not, you know, most of this stuff is not religious in any way. We call it religious or being a religious man when we say you're free from all this stuff. But it's not, it's purely and utterly logic and reason when you think about what this is telling you, that you're going to be judged by your works, not by your what you say you believe. So all these people, what I'm trying to get at here, is that all these people in these corporate churches, all these denominations, that just means name, renaming of the same thing, everybody's in a person. Everybody's a member of a church while with their driver's license, with their surname. But nobody is quote-unquote praying to God, if you will, in their actual name. Or their actual, you know, if you will, Christian name or first name. Everybody's a member of a corporation. And the Bible, you know, is very clear. When you pray, go into a closet. You know, I'm amazed every time I go home, I'll go to church with my mom, and I point out to her a while back, Matthew 6, I think it is, where it has the Lord's Prayer. And every church I've ever been to, funerals and stuff, people stand up and they'll say the Lord's Prayer and they'll chant it. And yet, right before the Lord's Prayer is printed in the frickin' Bible, what does it say? It says never talk in groups, never chant a prayer, never be in a public place when you pray. You can't worship God publicly. Those people are there for show. That's what the Bible says. It's calling people out. But people,
it's how they make the most money.
Right?
We'll get them all together and have to do something that they are not supposed to do, and then we'll hand out a thing, and they get to throw some money in it, and that's cool.
Well, I pointed this out to my mom. I'm like, look, Mom, it says here, do not pray in public. Do not do exactly what you're doing. Do not do as the Jews in the synagogue do, where they show up to pray and they judge each other, and it's, you know, that's, everybody knows what church is all about, right? So, I mean, here's the perfect example of what the Bible says compared to what the church says. Church says, hey, everybody get up and let's chant. publicly, a prayer to God means absolutely nothing, because Voltaire said it best. He said, and I'll paraphrase, he said something to the effect of, it's useless to pray to God if you're praying for something that's not of nature. Because, you know, what do the preachers on television tell you to do? They say to pray for money, for God's sake. They tell you to pray for mammon. You know, you can only have one God. It's either God, it's either nature, reality, or it's mammon, which is artificial money, valuation of things. And here are these preachers out there telling people publicly to pray for money, to pray for wealth, to pray for all the things that the Bible is against. This amazes me. This is so fascinating to me. And I told my mom this, and she has cognitive dissonance. About 5 minutes after I showed her, in the Bible, the paragraph before the Lord's Prayer that says, never pray this in public, always go step into a closet, be one, you know, one with nature, one with God. And what do? We just get up and we chant the prayer. Forget what the Bible says. Go with what your church says. And what I found out, showing this is the crazy part, man. The word Christian is basically it's used in the Bible in three different instances, and each time it's basically an insult. It's not a word that was used in the Bible as anything significant. Okay, Christian, you know, that's a term we use for, you know, but really what it is a term of the Roman Church. Okay, so then you got to wonder, well, okay, what is a Christian church then? Well, all roads lead to Rome when you're talking about Christianity, because Christianity was created as a pagan religion of Rome, not to follow Christ, but to actually take all the pagans and put them into a state type of religion that everybody could agree with. And so all these churches that say they're Christian, well, they're actually Catholic. Catholic means universal. That's all the word Catholic actually means. So the universal Christian church has a lot of denominations now, doesn't it? All these corporations, well, wait, what is it a corporation of? Oh, the nation. Well, who's the gods of the nations? See, this is
straight.
Right. And when you uncover what the purposeful mistranslations in the Bible, you find out that the word God, as it's used in the Bible, is very, very, very seldom used for God. It's, or for Jehovah, it's used for kings, for magistrates, for lords, for leaders, for archons, for everything but God. But they just tack the word God on there. And now I understand why that is, because our president is our God. The creators of our persons, government is our God. The people, technically, is our God. Because, you know, the people make the law, and we follow the law. The king of England, or the queen of England, the pope is God. All these different vicars of Christ, these are our gods. And until you wake up to that, you can deny it all you want. But if you're acting in the person of one of these gods, which is one of these nations, any nation, doesn't matter, then you've chosen your God. You've made your choice. Your election is clear, as the Bible says. See, now I understand this. Now I'm starting to really understand what peace is, what actual worship of God is, which is the worship and protection of that which sustains us, nature itself, creation, and the respect of only that which is real, nothing artificial, nothing at all artificial. And you're right. That sounds like a very, very difficult task. And yet, it's so simple to me. So incredibly simple.
And you know what? Yeah. You know, I heard, and you heard these different things that Fraud Bama has said on different different times. And I heard it from a coworker the other day mention, you know, if you have a, you know, you didn't make that. Remember when he said, "When if you have this, you have a company, you didn't create that, you didn't make that." And then after, you know, listening to you and trying to understand more about how fake and artificial this reality is, he's telling the truth. You wouldn't be able to do this if it wasn't for the fake creation. You know, if you have a company and you borrowed money from a bank, we made that happen. You didn't make that happen. So in a sense, he kind of was telling the truth, as much of a scumbag, and I'm not condoning anything that jackass has ever said.
They tell the truth all the time, but you've got it's like you've got this cleanup crew between Alex Jones and the other shock jocks out there that are popular. That was a while ago that Obama said something so damn important that I was actually ecstatic that he said it. Next thing I know, I'm checking all the threads, and everybody's going, oh, what a douche. Oh, he lies, he lies, he lies. I'm like, no, he's telling you the truth. These guys tell the truth all the time. It's just that you don't want – you want your truth to be the truth, not their truth. But they're the creators, and the creators control. So if you want your truth, you're going to have to leave the cities, leave their system like the Bible tells you. All these groups out there, by the way, your Trivium groups and your – whatever groups that are sort of these, you know, anarchists, all these different things, they all take their stuff from the Bible. They never give the Bible credit, but they all take all their stuff from the Bible. And if you do that, then you're taking part of the Bible, and you're not understanding the whole, which is another maxim of law. If you don't understand the whole, then you don't understand the parts. It's impossible. So he says, Obama says, you know, the Constitution, very, 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 very simply, very easy to verify if you do a little research. The Constitution is a negative document. It doesn't give you rights. It protects the rights you already have. People just went absolutely nuts because the whole alternative radio networks are based on continuing the lie that the Second Amendment, for instance, means that you have the right to have guns. Bullshit. It's not what it means. It's arms. Arms is heraldry. It's genealogy. It's the right to bear your private family, your bloodline, so that you have the right of inheritance. It has nothing to do with guns. It doesn't give you anything. And you find court case after court case after court case that tells you that. But you see, they're selling guns. They're selling. Money always gets in the way. Money is truly the root of all evil, because money is the only thing. The valuation that you put on money and the potentiality of money is the one thing that I find gets in the way of every conversation I have with people, because I can't imagine life without value. And everything in nature is priceless. If you think of it that way, if you think of the pricelessness of yourself, of every man on earth, every animal, every plant, as priceless, as something that cannot be replaced, as something that is beautiful and it needs to be protected. We're not here for dominion and destruction of our own, of that which sustains us. We're here to protect that and follow the law that allows us to stay. Otherwise, we're just going to keep suffering all these diseases. We're going to keep suffering all this pollution until some point we're going to knock ourselves out. We're going to just, you know, be another extinction. That's the judgment of God, but it's really us that's doing it.
Right, yeah, and I would say that too. Like we're going to be in judgment one day, and we misunderstand things. And I would sit there, you know, lately, and just thinking about the things that people say, the things that people repeat, and then I say to myself, I don't want to do that. So I try to think of another way or a different way or a more natural way of saying something, because I don't want to be, you know, not that I don't want to be part of this, because, I mean, ultimately, as I said, it's kind of like a baby steps out, you know, into, you know, venturing into a new world, which, you know, a few people that you know have done, and something that you want to do. And so I sit there and I try to take these little steps in the direction of, you know, I don't want to say it like that person just said it. You know, this the crude, vulgar, you know, this pig Latin, this garbage language that we speak. And, of course, they speak, you know, an entirely different language that if we don't know it, ignorance is no excuse in the eyes of their man-made artificial laws.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's exactly how it works. We are induced. And I'll give you a perfect example. One of the most interesting words I found in law. You have to realize law, it's fiction, so you can't apply emotion, you can't apply any of the vulgar concepts to the figurative or the artificial. It's just, you know, a cartoon, no matter how big its smile is, no matter how much it cries, it has no emotion. And that's really hard for people because we get emotionally moved by moving pictures that are made by man. We can have our entire life changed by watching a Disney cartoon, for God's sake. Right?
Yep.
And that's important to recognize how each of us, no matter how aware or awake we are, can be motivated by the fiction, by the artifice. It's everything. And so, no emotion whatsoever. So, the concept of love is my favorite. Look up love in any legal dictionary, you're not going to find it. What could love possibly have to do with the law? Right? And so what you find is that, you know, I found one entry in an 1889 law dictionary, and it said love, and it said see consideration. So I go to the word consideration, and it says consideration is an inducement to contract. So love to these freaking devil masters is an inducement to contract.
Right, like, consider this. Here, consider this. Like that. Like, I mean, here, check this out. This is a thing that we wrote up here, and it looks kind of cool. It's going to do a lot of really great things, Obamacare. And consider this. And there's your inducement. When they get you to consider something and participate in your own destruction or your own, participating in the fiction or this another chapter of this fiction, they induce you into that by getting you to consider it first and foremost.
Yeah, it's pathetic. But you know, I can tell people is when it comes to the Bible, first of all, you have to do one thing: separate, put it on a pedestal. And take everything else that's ever been created around it, every church, every religion, every doctrine, throw it away. Because it tells you to. It says, don't take any other gods, don't take any other doctrines before this. Period. End of story. Right there, that tells you all churches are bogus, right? They're all persons, and we don't respect persons. Okay, first thing you have to do, because all these guys out there, your Joe Atwills and they're all mixing the Bible and the church. Bible and the church. Bible and the church are the same thing. No, they're not. They're nothing. In fact, the Bible is very much against organized religion, against organized government, against all of these things. It's all about teaching you how to be free of such artificial things. And so you must separate the Bible from all of these different religions, and you must forgive all of the bullshit that they've taught you. You must put all of that crap out of your mind. You must not be prejudiced about it, and you must look at it in a completely neutral way, where you're not driven by artificial things. If you're looking at the Bible and you're driven by the artifice, you're never going to get anything out of it. If you're looking at the Bible hoping that it's going to make you money or hoping that it's going to bring you some kind of wealth, you're never going to get anything out of it. And that's why nobody gets anything out of it, because we're constantly seeking mammon. Everything we do is about making money and loving money and saving money and doing money and having sex with money. It's just everything's about money. I mean, it's just pathetic. And so all I can say is you got to separate it, and then you have to read it for what it actually says. And what I'm finding out now is, and it's fascinating to me, because basically, let's see if I can find this real quick, because I think this is so damn important. See if I can pull this up.
You listen to UCY Radio Sunday morning, March 6th, Co-Reality Radio with Clint Richardson, my co-host, guest co-host today. And we're talking about the Bible and the artificial creation of, the Bible said, hey, don't create a church. Don't pray together in public. You know, pray separately in your own alone with yourself. But they've really distorted a great deal of it.
Well, there's these hidden words that literally when you look in the concordances and the lexicons, they say no English translation. Remember, English is the language of illiteracy. So all these professors of English, you could immediately call bullshit because they're professors of what? They're professors of dog Latin. They're professors of a language that is specifically meant to make us illiterate. What's really interesting is every book you find on the shelf in your public schools and in your Barnes and Noble, they have a name because they're written in English and because they're meant to be they're meant to keep you dumbed down. They're books full of nothingness, basically, right? That's a good description of most of the shit you see in these bookstores, right? Or in public school. And they actually call that, it has a name. In Latin that's called the adversaria. That's the name of the entirety of the libraries of books. Adversary, in other words, adversarial to nature, adversarial to knowledge. Well, guess what? That's what Satan means. Satan just means that which is adversarial to God or to nature. Right? So, amazing. Amazing, these little things that start popping up. But this word, I tell you and I shit you not, man, the whole Bible is about this one word. And that word, self. Self is like the fourth word in the Bible, but it's not translated into English, into dog Latin. It's the word E-T-H-S, and you see it all over. It means a sign, a mark, a token. In the demonstrative sense of entity, properly it means self. So it's your identity, right? Unrepresented in English, it's the object of a verb or preposition. So my first name is like a verb. My last name is like a noun, a person, place, or thing. So I'm connecting the name, the empty name, or the legal name with the Christian or the real name, God's gift, if you will, of a name. And thus I'm tainting and corrupting my blood, figurative. Everything's figurative. So we're talking about the self. What is God? God is everything that is self-evident, that is not a creation of man, that is not an art, that is not, right? It's so simple when you actually think about it. And so what is Genesis 1:1 say? And there's another example, man. Genesis, the Bible didn't have the name Genesis. The first book of the Bible was not named with a name of Genesis. That came later. So the first thing you see in the Bible is a lie. Right? Because these translators, this is why you have to go. And it doesn't matter which Bible you're reading, you have to go and you have to look up every word you're reading. Because the translation might be different, but the origin is the same. The origin is always going to be that Latin, Greek, whatever. Oh crap, where'd you go? Okay, so S, here's what Genesis 1 actually says when you break it down in the with the proper words and what it was trying to say. And basically what this is, what Genesis and what the entire first book of the Bible is trying to tell you is that another artificial structure, a matrix, if you will, a legal matrix, an artificial world was created by the gods. Not by God. God, when used in the first book of the Bible, is not a reference to Jehovah. It's a reference to the Elohim, which is the plural term for gods. And when you break that down, what it means God, magistrates, rulers, kings, popes, that kind of thing. So the first sentence in the Bible basically says, in the beginning, which is Reshith, The gods and the magistrates, basically, the gods, Elohim, created, which is Bara, the entity, S, which is self, the heavens, and the entity, the earth. You see the difference? The gods didn't... To think of Genesis as the creation story of God would be to say that there's a timeline, that God is in the time domain. When the whole concept of God is the timeless nature of the universe, what is, what was, and what shall be forever and ever, that is God. But creation just happened to be on this particular timeline? Wait a minute, that doesn't make sense. And so, but if you consider that the gods, the kings of the earth, came along and said, well, how do we control people? Let's create a legal system. Let's create a system that we can take people's concepts of what their self is, and we can personify it into a fictional character that we can control, a person, a status in society. And so again, what does it say? The gods created the entity called the heavens and the entity called the earth. And I'm reading that, I'm going, holy shit, they created the fiction. The whole freaking story of the Bible is man's fall into fiction.
Well, so, I mean, I was going to ask, like, how far back does it go, the want and the need to, I mean, control people. You see it every day in every way now. It had to be so dominant and more so now, but still there back then.
I would say that there was a society that was much more advanced than us. If they were able to build a Tower of Babel, or the example of the Tower of Babel was used, where everybody started speaking the same language. And this is important because today we're speaking the same language. You know, I'm in America. Someone's in Japan. He can't speak English. I can't speak Japanese. But when we get on a computer, we have a virtual Tower of Babel. We can communicate through the computer. Either it translates, or we know a separate language—a language of numbers, a language of digits, it's code. We have the Tower of Babel, but it's not a physical tower. It's not a personification or anthropomorphization that we can see with our senses. No, we have the Tower of Babel because every nation in the world is now, just like in the story, is now communicating with each other without actually knowing the languages. And that's when God, you know, God's wrath came along and said, well, we need to destroy that which allows them to communicate so that they don't do exactly what we're doing today, which is to create this international system, United Nations, international healthcare system, international social security system. There's 130, 140 countries now in social security, so don't feel special, including China. And then create this entire system based on money where science is completely out of control. The nerds have taken over basically all of society, and we have unchecked cloning. We have unchecked stem cells, all the aborted fetal tissue that's being used for the reason Roe versus Wade was passed was to be able to harvest all this aborted fetal tissue that's just going to waste, right? going to waste. Can't have those good cells going to waste. Let's use it in Pepsi and Kraft, and let's do all these different things with it. It's crazy when you start thinking about what is possible through the artificial construct, through license. License is a word that actually means anarchy or lawlessness. When I have a license to commit a crime, or to do something, I should say, I'm actually committing a crime, but I'm licensed, I'm allowed to do that by the fictional state. I'm breaking God's law, but I'm following the law of man. And this is, again, it's the Bible warns you about all of these things, and it's amazing.
And so how is it that, I mean, even Pete, I guess, I mean, this is kind of probably going to be a silly question, but how is it that all these people that participate in these religions, you've got you've got your bishops. Somewhere locally in the Northeast, there was these two bishops that were molesting and having sex with children, and then they were caught. Did they even realize? And I guess it's just like the medical situation where they bring these doctors in and they treat them to be drug pushers, poison peddlers, and then people see them as deities because we've been taught, you know, we've been taught to admire the professionals. And so I guess I answered my own question there as far as with church, these churches and the people that are and become part of it, they are induced in the same way. So they don't even, I mean, they preach from the Bible and they talk to people about faith and all these other things, but they really don't know what it means. And they're just working through this bastardization of the originals. What I've been calling lately a bastardization of the creation.
Right. Well, Christianity is a flattering title. Right? So Christianity is an excuse not to actually obey God's law or to not separate yourselves and circumcise yourselves from the evil horde and the law and all that. See, this is the thing. That's the purpose. That was the purpose of Rome's creation of Christianity as a legal status. Legal, by the way, means against or opposed to God. That's very important to know. Legal is always that which is opposed to nature or natural law or God's law. Always. There's no exception. No matter how good the legal thing or the legal statement or the legal law sounds, that's what legal means, period, end of story. And so when we're talking about Christianity, we're talking about a flattering title. What does the Bible say? Don't respect flattering titles. They'll judge you. God will judge you, quote unquote, by your works. In other words, by your works, you will either live or die. Not, you know, there's no like consciousness. You know, when we talk about God, everybody wants to put a person in the clouds, and you want to think of it as man, because that's what the church teaches, because then they can act as gods, because what is God but a man, right? So the Catholic Church worships, think about what the Catholic Church and other denominations actually worship. They worship the cross, or more specifically, the crucifix, right? Now, again, I don't give a flying crap if you're offended by this. What are you worshiping if you're worshiping a crucifix?
The death of Christ.
Right. A big death cult. You're worshiping the death of Christ. Well, that means, of course, that until Christ's return, and this is another fallacy, Christ's return, there's no Christ coming back. Okay? And I, again, that's not a bad thing. Christ is only going to manifest through man when man decides to become Christ-like. Then Christ will manifest. Then Christ will return. But until man starts acting like the example, like the superhero that was left for us in the great comic book called the Bible, well then, you know, it's nothing's going to happen until we start manifesting the Word of God through the Son. You know? It all makes so much perfect sense.
Yeah.
Completely non-religious way when you actually start thinking about it. That's the beauty of it. You know? But the religions came along and they said, well, we'll bestow you this legal title, this protectionism and flattering title of Christianity. So, what's a Christian nation? See, here's the thing, man. And this was kind of shocking to me. So I always looked at this notion of this being a Christian nation. I'm like, that doesn't mean anything. It doesn't have any. If we were a Christian nation, then Christ would be the only example we'd have in our, you know, we'd follow the natural law and be done. So how are we a Christian nation? Why does every nation say they're a Christian nation, basically, all the first world nations? And you figure out after a while, oh, I see. So again, it's a flattering title. It means it has nothing to do with the Bible. Has nothing to do with the law, has nothing to do with anything except the fact that you have to have a combination of church and state to create a nation. So, Christianity, again, a flattering title, buddy, I don't give a shit. what you think you are. You are a Christian as long as you are a person of the United States. I don't care what religion you say you are. You are one of Caesar's Christians. You're in the district or seizure of the United States. You are a Christian because that means you're a pagan. You are a false follower of Christ. You are the kind of Christian that would sit in the Colosseum and watch the real followers, the ones who couldn't be controlled by governments and churches, they'd be fed to the lions. Those were true followers of Christ. But the Christians, no, they sat
in
the Colosseum. Right, so that's all of us. We're sitting in the Colosseums. We're sitting in the churches. None of us are actually acting the part. And that's the important thing to really, really comprehend.
All right. So, and on top of that, and I don't follow a lot of, you know, I said last or 2 weeks ago, I follow things just to see the propaganda, to see, to just try to track the degeneration of this corporation nation. And the best picture was about journalists, I think Boston journalists, that exposed Catholic Church sexual abuse.
Oh, yeah.
So you have more of an attack on something that should be attacked, for sure, but what does it do in general? It makes people turn away from the church. So they represent God. They're the vicars of Christ and all that other stuff. Then when they see this, they're like, I don't want to have anything to do with that. So it pulls them further away from...
It pulls you away from the Bible. See, that's the problem.
Right.
Instead of saying, oh, well, I'm going to go read the Bible to see what's going on here, you connect the Bible with the religion. Religion couldn't have come before the Bible, right? The Bible had to be first before the chicken and the egg, right? There had to be a Bible before there could be a Christian religion, right? So, obviously, you should go back to the source. If something offshoots from the source and it's corrupted, for instance, the United States government, well, then you should probably go back to the source, right?
Yeah. The source. Don't go there. Don't go to the source, for God's sake. Okay, so we have this control of people through religion. We have politics, many bloodsuckers created, you know, in the control. Rome. So I had somebody the other day tell me. He said, we're like Rome. You know, the same things that happened back then are happening today. And I'm like, oh my God, somebody just said something fucking, you know, really substantive to me. Oh my God. So I said, we are Rome. Rome didn't actually fall. We are Rome. The same blueprint, the same agenda is being worked. It works over and over and over again. And I said, and that's why people, you will hear say, history repeats itself. Of course history repeats itself because the same blueprint is being enacted throughout time.
To me, it's important to know that our system of law is still based on the Roman law. Let me read you, this is from Black's Fourth Dictionary, Fourth Edition, written, Lex Scripta. Again, remember, we're talking about the Latin terms all still apply. The English terms, which we call dog Latin, are very, very... For instance, Lex Scripta translates to written law. Well, that doesn't really tell you anything, because Lex Scripta is actually the Roman law. So written law deriving its force not from usage but from express legislative enactment or statute law. So this is what we call positive law, whereas the law of God is negative, meaning basically that, you know, the difference between negative and positive is essentially that if I have a negative right, which is what the Constitution protects, it means I've reserved all my rights, I haven't given you any power to do anything, therefore it is your duty to leave me the hell alone. That's my negative right. But of a positive right, we're all under personhood, which is positive or forced law, strict law. There's no choice. There's no what is right or wrong. There's only what is legal and what is illegal. Right? So lex scripta, again, the written or statute law, basically what the legislature creates and the judiciary then sort of puts into its own words. The Latin maxim, if the written law be silent, that which is drawn from manners and custom ought to be observed, and if that is in any manner defective, then that which is next and analogous to it, and if that does not appear, then the law which Rome uses should be followed. And then it says this maxim of Lord Coke, very important to read Coke's work, is so far followed at the present day, and this was 1948, I think, that in cases where there is no precedent of English courts, the civil law is always heard with respect and often, though not necessarily followed. So in other words, my friends, we're under the Roman law. The Roman law never left us. The English common law is essentially the Roman law. I mean, there is no separation. All roads lead back to that notion. Written law, or lex scripta in Bouvier's 1856, is the Constitution of the United States, the Constitutions of the several states, the acts of the different legislatures, the acts of Congress, and of the legislatures of the several states, and of treaties. Again, we're just talking about statute law. So everybody says, oh, the Constitution, even though nobody's hardly a party to it in the public, because we're under the strict law. The notion that the Constitution is different than the law of the legislature is patently false, ridiculous, absolutely stupid, that we actually have been trained to believe that the Constitution makes law. Constitution is a piece of paper, folks. Again, it's an idol. it's a god, basically, that establishes the people as a god.
And when George W. Bush said, it's Constitution, it's just a GD piece of paper, man.
And you know what? Again, God damned, absolutely, God would damn the Constitution because it has nothing of Christ in it. Has nothing of the natural law in it. Has nothing. It's a slave, it's a debt compact. That's what Constitution means, debt compact, debt contract, nothing else. Right? So it automatically is commercial. It involves money. Right, it's a goddamn. It is damned by God. Absolutely, we're in damnation. We're in a damned nation. All right. So, written law, statute law, Constitution. All the Constitution did was establish a legislature, the three branches of government, essentially. So, all the laws that come are after the Constitution, right? So there is nothing that is constitutional or unconstitutional. That's all bullshit. It has nothing to do with us. We're not under, or I should say, we're not over the Constitution. We don't have the negative rights that the Constitution protects because we haven't withheld or reserved all of our rights. As a personhood, a citizenship of the United States in public, I have no rights that are my own. I should say I have no privileges because privileges are only for private people. I'm public. I have nothing. I have no negative rights whatsoever. I've given all that up. I've turned my back on God, and I've accepted a false God as my law. So this is how it works. Again, this is exactly what the Bible says. Period. End of story.
Yeah. The Bar Association, another creation, another artifice. When was the Bar Association created? And I guess my question for this, you know, what I'm alluding to is obviously government and how, I don't know what percentage of this so-called, you know, public servants are lawyers, but it's got to be somewhere in the, you know, 70, 80, maybe even 90%.
I know it was over 50% of Congress, if I'm not mistaken, at one point. I don't remember what it is now. The bar, if you try to study the origins of the bar associations, you basically go into sort of a circular motion. It's very, very difficult to find any information on the source of the bar, but you go through and you see the Inns of Court and you see all these different aspects of the bar. What's important about it is that it's a person. What is a person? Why do we not respect persons? Well, a person is an individual, a corporation, an association, an organization. We're not supposed to respect these types of organized anything, whether that's government or church or anything else. We're not supposed to respect these types of persons, as the Bible says over and over. So what's important about the bar is not so much its origins, not so much how evil it is, although it's important, is really that the bar is not part of the judiciary. The bar is a private association, but then again, so is the Republican Party and the Democratic Party. You know, when you're supporting these parties, you're supporting 100% private associations that have nothing to do with your public sphere. The fact that you're supporting something private as a private association that only benefits those private members is ridiculous, patently idiotic in this country. But then we don't know how our own system works, so that doesn't surprise me. But the bar in 17, I think it was 1789, maybe 1789, I think, they did the Judicial Act. The Judicial Act basically assigned everything into the executive branch. And, you know, if you go to the Department of Justice, you're going to find the Bar Association. The Bar Association is part of the executive branch, folks. You're under administrative law. You're not under any kind of judicial aspect of any kind of third branch of government. The Bar Association is in the executive branch, as are you in your person, as is everything you do, because you are not acting as you should act. This goes back to participating in a personhood and a property of another, being surety or the insurance for the it's like a debt compact, they said, so it's a performance debt. So I'm to perform in my status, in my person, according to the written law. Because my person knows no other law. My person is a fiction. It cannot be a spiritual creature. It cannot have any emotion or anything. It's purely part of the artifice. So I can't expect God or God's law, the protection of the highest law, to have anything to do with my everyday life. I can't expect to have unalienable rights, which are God-given rights, if you will, if I'm acting in the person of another that's under a strict set of laws that are absolutely against God's law. We have to wake up to our own idiocracy.
Yeah. So, you said last week, and as I said, I was speaking to you before the show, you said you spoken about so many things with so many podcasts over there, RBN, just coming to your realization, and you said only the private are the elected. And I think I know what that means, but I kind of want to get an example, you know, of that from you. So what does that, how does that work? And I know that there's private people that we don't know. You spoke last week about private landowners that we pay rent to, that people have absolutely no clue who they are. And, of course, you also said that the quickest way to get, you know, get these people up in your grill is to and put danger to your life would be to start exposing some of these private landowners.
Well, yeah, the big difference, of course, being between what a state is and what a nation is. The nation is created by a compact of the states. And you have to remember that the word state means people. When we use the word state, estate in the proper sense of the private form of law, if you will, and under the law of nations, well, then you have the several states. We use the word several a lot. Several means foreign or private. Foreign also means private. So you have all these states that are the posterity, as the Constitution says, of the founding fathers and who they represented. So you have, in other words, you have a bloodline. And this is where people have a real difficult time contemplating that this could be the case. Of course, because it's not a pleasant place to come across, because we've all been taught about equality and not that somehow in this country there are no classes, which is just a bunch of crap.
And you can be president if you work hard.
You can be president. You can be president. And I suppose that for some people that's true, because you can become a private citizen. Of one of the states, give up your United States citizenship, which is basically slavery, voluntary servitude or voluntary slavery, and you can actually, become a private individual. You just have to go about it the right way and know what the hell you're doing. The problem is, there have been cases in history where a city, a municipality, a city is nothing more than a municipal corporation. Again, a person, okay? So, a county and a state, municipal corporations, nothing more, nothing less. United States is a municipal corporation. Don't ever think anything else. It's a fiction. Okay, it has no patriotism. None of that crap applies. It's a fiction. It's false. Right? So, we kill for a fiction. We literally will kill our brothers in a civil war over a fiction. So, when you start looking at the who can run for president, for instance, obviously, when you look at the genealogy, let's look at Barack Obama, for instance, right? Barack Obama is a white person. I think we've talked about that before.
By blood, right.
Right. So by blood, he is considered one of the white persons that can be the private landholders or the citizens of the state.
You get used to pedo.
He is the 22nd great-grandson of William the Conqueror. He is first cousin 15 times removed of Anne Boleyn. He is first cousin 19 times of Henry V and first cousin 16 times of Henry VIII. He is James Madison's third cousin 8 times removed. He's Harry Truman and Abe Lincoln's 7th cousin. He's Jimmy Carter's 8th cousin. He's Dick Cheney's 8th cousin. He's Gerald Ford's 9th cousin. He's Thomas Jefferson's 10th cousin, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Sarah Palin is his 10th cousin. Hey, George Bush, Vlad the Impaler, 32nd great-grandson. Diana, Princess of Wales, 11th cousin.
I've been playing the CBS clip that shows that, Obama is linked to Bush. Now, this is when Bush was in office or in fiction. And then, of course, he's connected to Dick Cheney. It all came out at some point, and I guess they had to control some of the narrative, that Cheney and Obama were seventh cousins. And then they go in, Obama is related to Brad Pitt. And even now, we're seeing through Janai.com that Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton are from the same couple. Through genealogically, I believe Hillary Clinton is from the male side, and then Trump is from the female side of a couple. I still don't understand I know obviously I know what cousins mean, but this, three, four, five, six, seven times removed, I looked that up, and it's still somewhat confusing.
The removed part, not as important as the first, what cousin you actually are. But what we're talking about here is, again, something the Bible refers to as, I believe, fabled genealogy. Don't respect the bloodlines, everybody. So this is the notion of the blood of Christ, the figurative blood of Christ. Everybody can be Christ-like, in other words. As long as you respect, you know, these fabled bloodlines, these fabled genealogies, well, then, you're respecting a god, the genealogy, the line of the gods, basically. And so when any country is created, and I don't know why people have such a problem with that, with the notion that America is no different, when any nation or country or state is created, it's always a bloodline, a family, or several families that get together and they call themselves the people. It's there's nothing new. The constitutions are a dime a dozen. The Masons have hundreds of, they have a book of constitutions. Churches are constituted. Everything's constituted. We're the only idiot nation that has a bunch of slaves that worship the Constitution as if it's the only constitution in the world. Everything is constituted. Everything has a constitution. It's a fallacy. It's a really strange notion that we say the Constitution as if it's some holy Bible. It is not. I mean, it has very. I can't tell you how little authority the Constitution actually has unless I were to read you all kinds of court cases and show you that the judiciary is the one that decides. The Bar Association is the one that decides what's constitutional and not constitutional, which means it means nothing. Absolutely nothing.
It's there as an artificial. It's more of a, hey, we'll tell them this so that they'll think that they've got this and this, and that'll keep them in and under control. You mentioned a specific organization that predicted the president or the next president throughout, the last 200 or so years by the bloodline. What is the name of that?
He's actually dead, but it was Burke's Peerage, which is one of the most respected sources of genealogy for the royal bloodlines, as they call them.
And then there was one that they didn't predict, which was Gerald Ford, and Gerald Ford wasn't even his real name.
Yeah, his name is Leslie Lynch King, and so that, I guess that threw. So I don't know if it affected his peerage. I'm sure it didn't because they have all the inside knowledge. But, yeah, he was predicting everybody that would be president, he predicted by their blood, by how much royal genealogy. So you take, you know, what's really interesting is you consider someone like George Bush, right? George Bush has his mother, which is on the Pierce side, right, Franklin Pierce. And, by the way, Mitt Romney is a dead ringer for Franklin Pierce. They're practically twins, you know. They're practically twins. So, you know, and Bush is, of course, really close cousins with Romney, et cetera, et cetera. So, you have George Bush has a dual genealogy. This is why the Bush family is very powerful. So you have the Pierce side, and you have the Bush side, which I can't remember comes from Salem, Massachusetts. I just can't remember the whole genealogy, but basically, it's hard to put into words. But George Bush, his mother is also his cousin. It's really, 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 really bizarre when you start putting all this shit together, and it's just incest. I mean, you watch, if you start watching the rags and you start watching all of the news for different cities around the world, you'll find that these people are getting married. Like someone in London will get married to someone in New York, or someone in Spain will get married to someone in Belgium, and you look, and of course they're cousins, and they're it's always been this way. It's always gonna be this way. This is how the fabled genealogies work, and their bloodline, of course, is more valuable than gold to them because it's what puts them in the power structure.
Right. You've got Hillary Clinton, and I don't know too much about her bloodline lineage, but she is related to Angelina Jolie, and then that makes sense that Jolie and Brad Pitt are married now, and but they're evidently adopting a lot of, you know, children from other areas of the world. I don't know if they have a biological child of their own yet.
Her fabled genealogy comes from, she's the direct descendant of Cleopatra. So his is basically the same line we're talking about. He's right up there with all these other guys. And you think about it, you know, anybody that you look at as far as their fame, you're going to be able to connect them. You know, you look at Beyonce, another white person. You look at
Tom Hanks.
Jimi Hendrix, another good example, another white person. Like first cousins with the Queen of England. Right? Why do these people get famous? Yeah, I'm not going to say Jimi Hendrix isn't a fantastic guitar player, but there are a dime a dozen out there. So why do these people get famous? Why are they given a platform? Why are they, for instance, Clint Eastwood always comes out in support of his cousins for president. So does half the other Hollywood establishment, and they're coming out against you. One's Democrat, one's coming out for Republican. Well, why is that? Well, because it doesn't matter who you elect. You're going to get the same bloodline no matter what you do. There is no real competition. It's all bullshit. And this is why I say, you can't be president. Give me a break, man. Unless you approve your genealogy, go through the process of establishing and becoming a landholder, becoming a private member of the state, quitting the United States, all that good stuff, you have no chance of being president. It's against the law.
It's against their law, right?
It's not qualified to be president.
So another thing that was very interesting to me was that Princess Diana is also related to George W. Bush. So that totally makes her not a commoner, which the media sold her as when she married that vile bloodsucker, Charles.
Either is, what's her name, that just married?
Kate. Yeah, she's not a commoner either. But they said, she's saying that, does that kind of like make them like, see, it's not about the bloodline, we like totally will marry like anyone and junk?
It is all just propaganda, yeah. And here's another example that I just don't think people think about. Think about World War One. What was World War One? Oh, what do you mean these guys, Republicans and Democrats are the same? They're the same people. It doesn't matter who you elect, you're going to get one of the bloodline. Well, look at World War One. Who fought in World War One? Well, let's see. He had the Queen of England, whose cousin was the Queen of Amsterdam, whose cousin was the Queen of Spain, whose cousin is the Queen. So you had a family war. Why is a bunch of people who are intricately entwined in their genealogy and rule because of it, not despite it, but because of their place in that genealogical line, why are they at war? It doesn't make sense unless you consider what war is, which is just part of the commercial cycle, basically. When commerce gets stopped up, when a worldwide commerce, you got to unplug it, you got to go to war.
Like now.
Yeah.
Like now.
Oh, yeah. If you listen to Greg, then yes, absolutely. And I'm not too far behind his reasoning.
He's got a lock on a lot of really great information. So last week you mentioned the War Powers Act. You mentioned that the Civil War never ended. And what else was it?
Well, it never really began.
Okay.
Couldn't really be ended. There was declarations, there was executive orders from Lincoln that basically declared a state of emergency, and so that basically is the same as a statement of war.
So what did they, and as you were explaining it last week, what did they accomplish by not establishing some of these parameters? And you mentioned that it never was officially ended, And so that gave them the ability to you know, use the crisis or the emergency to be able to manipulate, obviously, at that moment and then for years to come. Is that correct to say?
Yeah. So, again, we have the fallacy basically going on about the free country and all that. So, free country, kind of an oxymoron. Basically, that website, which is the Appomattox Courthouse site, says, you know, it asks the question, commonly asked or frequently asked questions, says, where's the courthouse where the surrender took place? It says the surrender occurred in the village of Appomattox Courthouse. Where was the treaty signed? It says there was no treaty signed to end the Civil War. The surrender at Appomattox Courthouse was a military surrender of an army which was surrendered. So it was an army. The Confederate government never surrendered, and even had it wanted to, the United States government would likely not have accepted to do so, would have legally acknowledged the existence, again, artificial existence of the Confederate States of America, and would have legitimized it, given it certain legal status, means it would have been protected from all the horrible things we did to it, that did to the South. Treaties are between two nations, and the U.S. would never concede the legal existence of the Confederacy. Again, treaties are between two nations, so between two gods. You understand?
Right.
So, even though it had, it says, all the trappings, all the, you know, government, armies, taxes, and all, everything about a modern government, it was never recognized, and so when you say it's a civil war, it wasn't a war between nations. It was a war within one nation. And the whole purpose, as Lincoln stated very clearly, his whole purpose was not to end slavery. He would keep slavery if he could. His whole purpose was to keep the Union intact.
And saving the Union was basically just...
saving their own asses, saving their own bloodline.
He was working for the... basically, who Obama works for today.
Yeah. Our history is so pathetic. I mean, right. It really is his story. You know, it's amazing what we don't know. I just
people say, break it down. His history, his story. What if he was a douchebag and lied?
Yeah.
Is that even possible? You know, but like, yeah, but you know, it sounds good. It sounds pretty cool.
So basically, what happened in the Civil War was that President Lincoln declared through executive order, executive order number one, in fact, that this whole Civil War thing would happen. So it was not an official congressional, necessarily, declaration. And so no treaty was signed, no proclamation. The proclamations that were made after were pretty shocking, basically saying that the unrest has been, you know, we killed everybody that we needed to. And if anybody ever gets out of line again, we're just going to beat the shit out of you. That's basically what the proclamation was. It wasn't a proclamation or a treaty of peace. It was basically a proclamation that established a permanent state of war. So, this is why they call it civil. As long as you act civil, well, you're not going to get your head beaten in. That's basically our law in the United States. People don't realize we're under martial law. We're under... the marshals of law. You have a military base. According to the Lieber Code, you have a military base in every state, which means that's a sign of the marshals of law. You know, people say, oh, well, you know, it's great that we have a military base. No, it's not, folks. It's horrible that you have a military base in every state. Horrible. That means you're under martial law. Because that is the key, that is how you know, according to Lieber Code number 1, Article 1, how you know that you're under martial law is the presence of a military force in your state. All right, so there was a report in 1973. I have all this, by the way, in my... let's see, it's called Cracking the Cult of the Constitution, Part 1. on my blog. If you guys, I mean, it's a lot of information to go through. There's two parts. I keep meaning to make a third. But this is from 1973. After about the initial sort of state of emergency or permanent state of war, if you will, which emergency and war are the same thing, basically, it never really lifted. There was no treaty and no proclamation that ever actually lifted that state, that original state of emergency or war. And so we've been in this, basically, in this same system of presidential dictatorship since. This was made official in 1933, I think it was, when Congress basically just said, okay, we're just gonna, you know, this is when all the bad shit happened, all the banking stuff and everything, the farm bill. And Congress just basically came out and said, it's still in the law. It says, hey, whatever the president does from now on, we pre-approve. I mean, that's the law of the United States. That is the law of Congress. They can change it anytime they want, but they don't because they're not in competition. It's a big lie. The law literally states, and I'll get to the actual credit, says, hey, Congress pre-approves whatever the president declares as an emergency. That's War Powers. That's the War Powers Act. That is the Emergency Powers Doctrine of this country. The report 1973 was called Senate Report 93-549. The Senate was charged with compiling a report to which it was decided upon the efficacy and necessity of the continuance of these emergency war powers of the executive branch. This is, of course, you know, after World War II and all that. This report was named Senate Report 93-549 and was commissioned by the Special Committee on the Termination of the National Emergency. Well, if in 1973, if you had a Special Committee on the Termination of the National Emergency, well, obviously you're in a national emergency. That's important because when you're in a national emergency or a state of war, there is no law. Necessity, war, and necessity are kind of the same words, and when you are in the law of necessity, there is no law. What is necessary supersedes any form of law. The report, in its introduction, it says since March the 9th, 1933, the United States has been in a state of declared national emergency. A majority of the people of the United States have lived all their lives under emergency rule. For 40 years, freedoms and governmental procedures guaranteed by the Constitution have, in varying degrees, been abridged by laws brought into force by states of national emergency. And in the United States, actions taken by the government in times of great crisis have, from at least the Civil War, in important ways shaped the phenomenon of a permanent state of national emergency. Man, you want to know why everything's so messed up? Why the president actually can declare law through his directives and his executive orders? Man, you're in a tyranny. You're in a nation that has allowed its president to become a dictator. Congress fully supports this, even though they pretend not to.
Right. And here we go. Here we go. You have broken all this stuff down. You've done the reading. You've done all these, you know, all this incredible research. And then we look at your example, a really, really awesome example. And then we look over at a guy like Alex Jones, who supposedly has done all this research, all these things, and yet he says that Obama, you know, he's becoming a dictator, he's becoming this, he's becoming that. Is he really, does he understand, is he part of this bloodline lineage? Is Alex Jones a fiction? I don't know if I know we've spoken about him here and there, and of course I got him to, you heard in the beginning, when I met Mr. Jones and a bunch of us were doing shots together, and we were at the Bilderberg barbecue. in one of my early ventures, much like your We Are Change Utah, where throughout all of those different events, Clint, your ability to stay incredibly calm, it was unbelievable. I was sitting, I was watching you. I'm like, man, that was totally fucked up, what that guy just did or said to Clint. And yet you just kept this really, really firm, you know, confidence and calm. And I was like, this guy's like bulletproof or something, you know. But and then I remember it, some of the things and some of the descriptions in the videos that, okay, this is part, you know, this is part of Clint's journey. He might not, he understands so much more now than he did before, much like I do. And so as you're going through this, and we see this guy, Alex Jones, and I saw some references that you made to him, a number of different in the videos with Infowars.com. What does Alex Jones do? What is his purpose? Is he here to foment a Bolshevik-style revolution in this country? What is he? What is he?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, he's Alex Emmerich Jones. I can't find anything on his genealogy. I've found about 20 different corporations that he owns. His ex-wife is the daughter of the Bronfmans, which is a very, very, very high power Jewish lawyer team. And of course, his kid. Has the right of return to Israel, therefore. There's a lot of things about the guy that I find very disturbing, that I don't understand why people haven't gone back to his history and back to his beginnings when he was lying outright to people. Y2K, perfect example. He was on the radio, you know, like Orson Welles, saying that power plants and shit were being, you know, utterly destroyed and blowing up and being blown up, and bombs were dropping on Y2K, and everything was going mad. Meanwhile, nothing was happening. There's just so many different cases of his lying, absolute through his teeth. Some guy compiled all of his predictions, which I found to be extremely humorous, and they're all about us dying. Everybody, someone's going to die, you're going to die, we're going to die, your family's going to die, and it's going to be on this date, on this date. Well, it's going to be on this date. And never an apology, never a sense that, I was wrong, never a sense of gee, sorry. I have people coming to me in my We Are Change group scared shitless because they listen to Alex Jones. And I say, look, stop listening. Start doing your homework. Start reading. Because the second you do, you're going to realize this guy's full of shit. So, I mean, personally, I'm very down on the Jones machine. I find fault with almost every story they create. I could probably do a whole website just debunking with very easy proof the stories that they put out. They support other Suzanne Pucelle is one I can think of right now, who's come out with some real bullshit imaginary stuff. You know, understandable mistakes sometimes, but sometimes very much not. Right. And I will say this, long time ago, I wrote a blog about the airport scanners when Alex Jones and the Drudge, I think, report first started reporting on the airport scanners and stuff. Right. They actually went to a site in Germany, an obscure model site, nude model site, and they downloaded a picture of this really, really hot, beautiful, big-breasted, naked woman. And that's the picture that they superimposed. They changed did a little color correction and made it look like a nude picture taken from an airport scanner, and they promoted it as that. They didn't apologize when it was discovered. There was never any retraction. There was never anything to say, oh, yeah, we lied outright in your face. I had the link to the picture, the link to, you know, you could tell it was the same picture. Nothing. There's just there's no remorse. There's no requieting of the lies. It's just, and that above all else is what I think, you know, really really bothers me to the extreme, because then everybody keeps parroting the lie. The lie keeps going, and sometimes he'll come out, you know, in an obscure little report, and he'll say, "Oh, I was wrong about this," but then that'll disappear from his website. The lie subsists. So what is he? At best, he is the spy who kills one of his own to prove that he's not a spy.
He's a Judas goat.
Yeah, he's controlled opposition in every way, shape, or form. But again, patriotism, Pat Riot, is, you know, it's the same thing. Everybody's a controlled opposition. We have to come to that realization ourselves, that, you know, whether you're promoting the bullshit or you're following the bullshit, whether you're parenting it or promoting it, either way, you're controlled of it.
And there's really never any solutions. I mean, They're like so bad. The solutions are so bad. As a matter of fact, this guy called up one time and he said, "Hey, Alex, I've been listening for a long time, and I got an idea here. Let's start exposing some of these globalists. Let's start, you know, like, we get their addresses and stuff, and we can go there, and we can do this, and we can do that." So some of it sounded like a kind of legitimate thing that could be done on a certain level. But an example of Alex just backpedaling would be like, well, you know, you got to create your own, you know, website and do your own podcast and all this other stuff. There's never any real substantive.
I went on the radio with Joyce Riley on. I'm not really welcomed on GCN for obvious reasons. But before all that, I was on with Joyce Riley. This was years ago, and during the break, she was telling me, I was amazed how much they actually have to pay to be on that station. She was like, you know, I have to pay $18,000 a month, and that's why we do all this advertising and sell all these products. Jones pays, you know, $34,000 or $35,000 a month. Now he's up to $80,000 a month or something like that. It's just ridiculous how much money it takes for that big corporate thing to be running.
And people to expose the globalist.
Right. So here's the trick, man. You say there's no solution. You're absolutely right. Why is there no solution? That's the question. Okay, the only solution you have and I have is to end our contract with it, to stop, to get out of it, to not be a part of it, to not be a citizen of it. That's what solution means. Everything else is just remedy. You get money, you know, that kind of thing. So the problem, and again, remember what we're talking about here. We're talking about a matrix system, a legal matrix that they themselves have set up. Their founding fathers have set up, and they have altered and twisted to their benefit ever since. So you got to think about something here, man. These people, in their legalistic minds, and this is so important to understand, in their minds, they are not doing anything wrong. And in their system, they're not breaking any laws. They make their own laws because they're the sovereignty. Okay? You can't go to a king and say, "King, I want you to punish yourself for breaking your own law." This is important. It is not our system. Okay? It is not our system. We are citizens, subjects of their system. They are on top of the system. We are on bottom. We are the slaves to the system. They are the masters. That's called volunteerism. This is the doctrine of master and servant. Look it up. Got to understand, they're not doing anything wrong. According to them and their law, they are not doing anything unlawful. they have license to do whatever they want to do because it's organized anarchy, it's organized chaos. Until we figure that out, until we figure out that the law is not some personified, you know, knight in shining armor that's going to come protect us, the Constitution, a goddamned piece of paper, is not going to suddenly flap out of the freaking museum it's housed in and come and rescue us. I don't understand people's philosophy when it comes to this, but it, you know, we've been trained to believe in these superheroes, supernatural, something that is not of nature as our hero. Right. Let's go full circle. I'm telling you, there's only one superhero.
Give me an example of an elected person who is a private citizen, who is not a citizen like we are.
The electors of the state.
Oh, the electors of the state. Because last week I thought you said only the elected, and I might have misunderstood, only the elected like a Cruz or a McCain. Are they public citizens? Or are they a fiction?
So if you, it's hard to pin this down because you don't have the, unless you're going to spend many, many hours insisting and somehow getting a copy of who is the private citizens of the state of California or who are the private citizens of the state of, you know, the actual people, not the citizens, not the foreigners that are the United States citizenships. But the actual people of the states, unless you, I really need to do this. The electors of president are going to be a private people. Now, some of them are going to be operating in a trust. And this is the thing. One of the things KW and a couple other people have explained to me that I don't fully understand. But you... Now, once you're private, then you can actually come back into the system and operate in trust. This is what, say, the CEOs and people responsible for Enron, for instance, right? They'll create a trust. They'll create a name for themselves. Instead of taking the name of the state, of the United States, they'll create a trust with a name. They'll operate in that trust as a CEO. And then all of a sudden, when all the shit starts to hit the fan and all the crime starts becoming apparent, all they have to do is quit being the person, quit being the truster or the trustee. That is their secret. This is why they get away with murder. They get away with crimes galore. This is why Obama has so many Social Security numbers and so many names. They're all trusts. They're not him. They're not a United States citizen per se in that way. So, yeah. Electors of the states, and in Utah here, one of the videos, I don't know if you saw my video with Shurtleff, but he was the attorney general, and we had delivered a bunch of evidence to the...
Oh, I did see that, and he was like, he was a real douche.
Dude, he's a big, mean motherfucker.
And yet you were still so cool, dude. You were just like, you were just looking at him like, really? Really? And you just were just hitting him with the facts, and then he was just like, he was getting nervous too, because he was like,
if you would have been there, man, people were like, because people that know him, he was like, he was about to hit you, he was about to just pop.
Yeah,
you.
That's what I was thinking. Like, man, is he gonna do something? Is he gonna?
It's like you do to me is lie, because if I know you're lying, then that angers me and calms me at the same time. Then I just start, you know, but he's in jail, man. He and the attorney general before him are both in jail. Guess what? They were electors for the Obama, was it Kerrion Obama or, I can't remember.
Kerry and Bush?
They were the electors. They're the ones that actually voted for president. They're in jail now. So, yeah, these are examples of the private bloodline of people. Do you think someone's going to make attorney general of the state of Utah or any other state if they're not part of the... And be put into a political power structure? You know, everybody knows the elections are rigged. Everybody knows the choice, the so-called choice they have put in front of them is a choice between two people that they never have even heard of half the time, and nobody bothers to check to see if they're cousins or what their background is, where they come from. So, I mean, it's you know, you don't have to think very hard to figure this stuff out, that this is this closed-loop system, that we have masters and we are their servants, and we are not. Yeah, we can get municipal election type of stuff, you know, but we're never going to be governor, which is another word for God. Or chances are not going to be mayor, which is another word for God. Not going to be president, not going to be vice president, senator, congressman, other words for gods. It's just not going to happen.
Right. You know, last week on 60 Minutes there was a story on there about the Social Security, where dead people, people that have died, their families are still getting their Social Security, and then people that are that they're alive, but they've been deemed dead.
Yeah.
And what they have to do to get back in, okay? And I just saw it, and I was just like, oh, man, I got – if you get a chance, I mean, I'll see if I can find the link. I'll send it to you.
There was a story in the Huffington Post. The guy, he left because he was so underwater with his debt, the wife and the alimony checks. He left for, you know, several – it was like 13 years. He came back, and the judge said, oh, sorry, we declared you dead. You have no civil life, right? Mm-hmm. Which is actually a wonderful thing.
That's what I was going to say. Like, they don't know how lucky they are, in a sense.
And that proves, you know, the notion that your life, as you know it as a person, is fictional. It doesn't exist. It is at the whim of the court.
Exactly, yeah. And that, you know, I didn't even think of it. I thought of it, like, you know, in a certain way, but until you said that, you know. So
here's this guy begging for his quote-unquote life back, his fictional artificial life, so that he can have benefits from the state. And this is, you know, what's happening right now across the world is with all these refugees and everything. The purpose of – we're all refugees in the states that we're living and residing in. We're all refugees. So creating international refugees, it's very clear when you go to the United Nations website, they're biometrically – cataloging and registering, just like Caesar did in the Bible. They're registering every single person that they can for Social Security, health care, and all of that shit. If you're going to get benefits, then you're going to have to be registered.
We got less than a minute. Clint, thanks so much for hosting last week and for being on with me again today. Your information is so critical, and you know, it's got to stay fresh in people's minds. So I'm happy to be here with you today. They actually left me alone for a little while today, so we were able to get the whole program out with any interruptions on my end. Thanks everybody out there over in there in the chat room, realityblogger.wordpress.com, Corporation Nation. Anyway, you know it. You'll see it. You'll hear him tonight at 5:00 on his art time. Thank you.
Try to stop them. Don't put that on your wish list. That's retarded babble. Protesters make you hit as soon as they start to rabble. So you're nothing but fishes in the barrel. It doesn't have to be Christmas for a carol.